Brown, Leo Brown, almost our culture, current events, Catholic things, 50 minutes every afternoon. The plot seems to be thickening. We'll discuss this as we look a little bit more closely into the FBI investigation of the Trump election candidacy and what happened through that time when it comes to Russian involvement. Obviously, something was happening, according to the FBI. See where they're going with that. And now saying no evidence of Obama doing any wiretapping. That's not where the smoking gun is lying. The smoking gun is lying in the Trump administration ties to Russia. We'll see how this all pans out. Also, Neil Gorsuch on his confirmation hearings. Is this the great hope of the next Antonin Scalia taking the bench? Could be. He sees some differences himself between he and Scalia, and he talked about that, interestingly. And nepotism in the White House, nepotism in politics, say it isn't so. Ivanka Trump, who was supposedly going to stay clear of her dad's administration, now setting up shop near the Oval Office with her own office. We'll talk about nepotism's potential challenges this afternoon as well. All of that and more. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back in a moment. Back, I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, current events, Catholic things, 50 minutes every afternoon. Neil Gorsuch, the pick for the Supreme Court from the Trump administration, now in his Senate confirmation hearings. And this seems to be what has certainly been the major issue for many voters in this election. Or at least, let's put it this way. This is what was presented as the major issue. Who cares? Trump could be a scumbag. We don't care. He's going to appoint conservative justices. Because, right, the Supreme Court is supposed to be a battle of politics. This is, of course, it's the, I guess, the unwritten rule of the Constitution. If there's not a political battle of ideologies on the bench, then we're not getting where we need to get with this. That's the thing, right? Easy to think that. At least it seems to be easy to think that. So at this point, we're watching this confirmation. We're hearing from Gorsuch, and he certainly seems to be, from what I can tell, a fair constitutionalist. He seems to be saying the right things when it comes to those that he's defended, those that he is convicted. He has been pretty clear about the fact that there are, in his own words, those who would be of Native American descent, those of even not having legal status, those who have been defended by him, those, again, who he's had to convict because of the crimes that they committed, and regardless of who they were, what they were as individuals, that he doesn't judge on the person but judges on the action. We would hope, right? We would hope that that's what we see. That's a judge, right? A judge is one who would look fairly at a situation with justice, true justice in mind. Justice that says we're not here to play favorites. We're not here to find a way around, a way to make this work. but a fair assessment of the situation and to rule appropriately. Now, we hope that that's what we would see in any justice, but as I mentioned a moment ago facetiously, it appears as though many of us, or many voters, let's put it this way, I cannot include myself and say us, because I don't think this. I don't think for a moment that we need to put justices on the bench in order to have a political ideology speak from that bench. Yeah, I don't care which direction. But this seems to be the impassioned cry of the voter saying, no, we've got to have the right justices in place that will ensure our agenda. Because if we don't, then the other side wins. Right? I mean, intelligent people say that. Well-meaning, well-intended individuals say crazy things like that. And it's just accepted. Oh, that's just politics, yeah. Supreme Court, absolutely. We got to make sure we get a conservative in there so we get the right conservative justices. No, we got to make sure we get a liberal in there because we got to get... That's crazy. But we do it. And it's accepted practice as if that's the way the court works. Weigh it out, balance it out, get the right mix of whatever side you want, and we got it. Now, my argument was and continues to be that it doesn't matter who the president is. And it doesn't matter who that president appoints. And it doesn't matter their record prior to being appointed or how quickly they pass through Congress or how the Senate confirmation hearings go, I should say. But when they get on that bench, that's really all that matters, right? Because that's what all of this work is for. How do they rule when it comes to a Supreme Court decision? And we've seen it more than once where you think you got a guy or a woman who you can trust to be down the aisle on this particular issue. No question, it's always going to be he's got the record, he's proven himself to be whatever, litmus test, provable. And he goes and gets on the bench, and all bets are off. We've seen that. I think we've seen that with Justice John Roberts, Bush appointee. Definitely. Justice Anthony Kennedy, right? This is, am I right on this one? He's the Bush 43 appointee. Is that right? No, don't hold me to that. We've had a couple of conservatively appointed individuals who end up with just crazy rulings. He may be a Bush 41. Don't hold me to that. Anyway, I'd have to research that. Don't have it in front of me. So don't assume that just because somebody has a track record or someone has an appointee from a conservative-leaning president is an appointee from that conservative-leaning president, that means anything about how they're going to rule on the bench. We don't know. We just don't know. But with that said, what we want them to rule is justice based on the Constitution. That's their only role. Is this constitutional or is it not? And it's interesting that it takes nine of them. Nine supposed constitutionalists, because at any given time, half of them may see something completely different. Well, this one is constitutional. No, it's not. And there have been those unanimous rulings, of course, where the entire all of the justices judge in the same direction and say, no, this is a clear-cut situation of infringement of constitutional protection. Whatever, you name it. They've done that. Not sure how many times in the course of history that's happened, but it's happened. But to assume that the Supreme Court is as tied into politics as the rest of an administration, I think is in and of itself is an injustice, right? We're not being just by doing that. And by insisting upon that, by insisting that we find those individuals who pass particular litmus tests, the only test a Supreme Court justice needs to pass, granted they'd be qualified to do the job based on their experience as a judge, the only test they need to pass is, do they interpret the Constitution in the way it was intended? That should be it. Not, are they pro-life or pro-abortion, or are they going to overturn Roe v. Wade, or are they going to keep it law of the land? No. But that's how we think, right? We think that's the only issue that matters. So we, as voters, we want to legislate from the bench. We say we don't, and we say crazy things like, oh, yeah, you know, this judicial legislation, that's just, yeah, we're not... We don't want that. We only don't want it when it's not what we want, right? Let me say that again. We only don't want it when it's not what we want. When it's what we want, we'll accept that all day long. Oh, yeah, well, that judge made a great decision. Look at that. Well, that was incredible. We value that decision because it's what we want. Rarely do we really boil things down to principle. That's a problem. That's a problem I've witnessed on both sides of the political fence, and it's why I'm an independent. Because we don't stick to principle. We simply say we like this, we don't like that, and it really comes down to, does it fit our politics? Does it align with our narrative? If it does, then all is good. We can't keep doing that and have any credibility. Let's put it that way. Not as people who claim to be Catholic, who claim to have a heart for our faith above and beyond other whatever political leanings, we can't do that. Simply can't. And have credibility. You can do it. You do it. We do it. All day long, we do it. But it damages our credibility every single time. So, in this, granted, I mean, the only dog we have in the fight is whoever we elected to get in there in the Senate to help move this along, but my goodness, we need to stop that. We just need to stop that rhetoric. If we are people who believe in justice, true justice, which we should, justice and mercy, those are our two big ones as people of faith. If we believe that, then all we should want is a justice who is focused on that, not one who's going to be hell-bent on overturning Roe v. Wade. Again, that's a cultural issue I think that needs to be addressed, and that's another conversation. But we need to simply say, is this individual going to judge constitutionally? That's the question. Gorsuch, seems to be talking the good game. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour, back after this. Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Catholic Things, 50 minutes every afternoon. Thank you for joining us. Well, it looks like the investigation now is saying that there is no evidence of an Obama wiretap, but appears to be evidence of Russian interference and connection to the Trump team. So, interesting. Right? Where is this going? At this point, I'm not sure that we really know, other than there's this credible evidence versus no evidence. Kind of should open the opportunity to at least begin to dig deeper. You see credible evidence, you see, okay, there's something here, which was already established. That had been determined even before this recent investigation, that there was something happening, at least some interference that had been determined. But now it appears as though there might be a little bit more of a smoking gun. And I think that that's what, in this time, everyone has kind of been waiting for, or at least dreading, whichever side of the fence you're on there. You're waiting for the smoking gun, you're dreading the smoking gun. That's generally, there are only two camps on the smoking gun. Or you just don't care about the smoking gun. But either you're going to be incriminated, and that's bad for you and your supporters, or you're going to be incriminated, and that's bad for you and your supporters, but it's good for those who really think you should be incriminated, right? So it is one of those, it is what it is kind of situations. But at the same time, if there was something going on, as it appears to be, and especially, I guess this is the big one for me, especially if, as it was going on, and you were doing something fraudulent, the whole time you were crying fraudulence toward everyone else, right? I mean, let's think about this. And as we're thinking, we're just thinking. No evidence, no proof, no determination of anything yet. But let's say that there was interference, and let's say it was orchestrated. And let's say that orchestrated interference was led by none other than the guy who's trying to get to the office. So he sets up this elaborate web of conspiracy, which is not theory, right? It's conspiracy. It's conspiring with a country that we've got political sanctions against because of their behavior in other countries, the Crimea situation, and all of the things that are happening. And you got somebody who was actually conspiring with these individuals, and then to maybe deflect, or maybe some sort of bizarre, you know, because I don't know, I know I'm jumping around, but here's what I know. I had a friend in college, and he was Mr. like weird anti-gay, okay? Weird anti-gay. And I say that because we did theater together. There were gay students and teachers around us. He would hang out with these people, but at the same time, he always had like snide remarks about, oh, they're such a fag, or, oh my goodness, look at that homo, or what, like, you know, he would always like make these kind of bizarre sort of statements about people, and some that were completely untrue because there weren't. These guys that he wanted to decry were not anything of that nature. And then I ran into him a few years after college, and this guy is like lisping and just as gay acting even as anyone I've ever seen. Like, didn't behave that way in college, and now he's telling me, oh, so I haven't seen you since college, and well, I sleep with boys now. And I'm like, oh, what weird, what's the weirdest thing, right? How weird. Because in college, he had this bizarre bend against gay guys. And now he's out of the closet and as queer as a $3 bill, as they say, right? So, and I say all of this as a guy who, honestly, I mean, I've always been around homosexuality. I saw it in my family as a young guy, and even getting into the arts as I did as a teenager, it's been a part of my environment, and I have no anti-gay sentiment at all. But I say this as an illustration of a situation where you got a guy who is so fighting what is within him that he's got this bizarre sort of projection against everyone else around him. To the point that even the straight guys who really don't exhibit any of the things that he supposedly detests. He's accusing them. This is what this guy did, right? And then you see a political figure who all he wants to do is say, this guy's lying. This opponent is lying first in the election, leading up to the election. Liar, 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 liar. Everybody's a liar, right? Everybody's a liar. And you get into office, you can't even trust the news because it's fake. It's all fake. Everything's fake. That's all fake. This guy is trying to surveil me, right? He's trying to get information on me. He's trying to spy on me. This guy's a spy. He's trying to spy. And, oh, and corruption. Oh, and this, and there's voter fraud. My goodness, there's voter fraud. Everybody's fraudulent. All of the votes are fraudulent. I should have won the popular vote as well as the electoral vote. And that's your drumbeat. That's all you do, is say, this is a problem, and you're trying to fabricate. You're not just pointing. It's one thing, and here's the thing. I got no problem with pointing out things that need to be pointed out. If somebody needs to blow a whistle, if somebody needs to show a spotlight, that's good. That's fine. If it's legitimate. If this guy in college would have been anti, let's say, bigot, right? Let's say he was just an anti-bigot, and he hated bigotry so much, and he couldn't stand to see injustice, and he called people out on it, and he talked about it all the time because he just so badly wanted to see people treated fairly. That's one thing. And that's fair. And that's honorable. And it's okay to point those fingers. And it's okay to try to unearth that reality of, let's get to the bottom of this and show that people need to have human dignity and be treated well. But when all you're doing is trying to say that everything is either A, a lie, B, fake, C, rigged, or D, some sort of espionage, and all you do is time and 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 time again try to present that, that might be some sort of bizarre form of projection. That you're just projecting all of that onto everyone because you're as guilty as the day is long of all of those things. Because I think at the very least, and I don't care if you're a Trump fan or you're a Republican or what side of the political fence you sit on, I don't care. I think even those who support the guy, now they're starting to say, we just got to pray for him. Right? Instead of seeing him on Facebook, just got to pray for him. Okay, well, stop defending him. Pray for him, but don't defend him. If that's your tactic, then just let that be the only thing that comes out of your mouth. Go and pray for his whatever. And I know that there were those who said that during the Obama administration, we just need to pray for his conversion. I got it. But stop defending him. Stop defending this guy who is saying ludicrously crazy things with complete lack of substance and now has potentially some credibility when it comes to something that was at least suspect, maybe egregious. I don't know that we know yet. But it's interesting as we see this develop and the questions, I think more questions than answers at this point, and this is what I've asked all along. If this was the case, if this really was the case, if it proves to be, we'll discover. But what's the motive? I think we got to ask that. Was the motive just to win? I don't think so. And if that was the case, that's one thing, and it's bad, but it's not diabolical. If the motive was to somehow undermine this country in some sort of wheeling and dealing, basically selling our resources or whatever, right? Or our political favors, or we can promise there's not going to be any sort of embargoes or any sort of sanctions placed and all of that will be lifted and we'll move this forward, whatever, right? You're playing politics before you're even in the office. Again, it's bad if you're just trying to rig an election. That's bad, but not diabolical. Diabolical if you are selling your country out. We don't know. I think we will know. We don't know yet. We will know. And time will tell, and I may be the crazy one. I hope. I hope I'm the crazy one, right? I'd much rather be me, because there's much less at stake if I'm the crazy one. We'll be back with more in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour, back after this. Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, Catholic things, 50 minutes every afternoon. Haven't had time to dig into the story, but it looks like Pope Francis is apologizing for the role of the church, or the lack, I guess, of the role of the church in the Rwanda genocide of the 90s and that Hotel Rwanda movie. If you haven't seen that, Don Cheadle, just an amazing performance. And, I say it a lot, but I think it's important to realize just what can happen when tribalism takes root, as it did in Rwanda. And even those within communities, because they are mortal political enemies, they're political. I mean, come on. Tribalism is a politic. That's what it is. I mean, it's territorial, yes, but it's because you've got your ways, I've got my ways and your ways don't mix. We cannot mix. We're diametrically opposed. We're mortal enemies, we're polarized, you name it, right? And so, therefore, in order for me to advance my agenda, you got to be out of the way. This happens. Happens in extreme fascism, happens in extreme communism at times. There are these attitudes of let's get everything out of the way until we get where we need to go. We've seen it on both sides. And this, of course, is what happened in Rwanda. A chilling, just heart-wrenching movie, which is true. You watch this movie done, my goodness, what now, 20-some-odd years ago, 25 years ago? When was it done? Shortly after it happened, the movie came out. And just a terrible, terrible view of what can happen when we play this type of politic to the point of people actually becoming enemies, right? Enemies. Not just, we don't agree with your policies. We want to find a way to change the direction and maybe we just need to vote for different representatives. No, you got to be stopped. You got to be stopped at all costs. You and your people need to be stopped, and we'll do it. Most of the, 300,000? I mean, it was a ridiculous number who were slaughtered with machetes. Just so, we have a beautiful, wonderful Holy Father who is willing to take responsibility, accept responsibility, own up, and say, what can we do? How do we change this direction? And I think that that's a beautiful step in the right direction. Again, I haven't read the details, but I know enough about the situation that happened there to see that anytime healing can be presented after, I mean, my goodness, right? There still has to be raw emotion over that, even all these years later. I know I'm emotional about it. I wasn't even personally involved, but I know that it was a tragedy. So, interesting story regarding Ivanka Trump, which I'm asking, is this the First Lady? Is this the one who's going to be on the forefront? I've said it from the beginning. I actually said, who's got the best opportunity? God willing, Trump keeps his nose clean enough to make it through 4 years and no rocking scandals that are just going to completely derail this administration and ruin any chances of his dynasty. He's got a dynasty potentially, right? I mean, he's got a lot of kids and he could cycle through. But as I've said before, the first female president could, again, depending on how this administration plays out, could be Ivanka Trump. Said that from the beginning. Time will tell. Trump's got to keep his nose clean enough, and we got to get through this without, again, any devastating, derailing scandals like old Russian involvement in the election. But if he does, then there's a great chance that Ivanka could emerge as the next real viable candidate for the presidency. Very well could be. More so than a Mike Pence coming in and taking the role as a vice president moving in. We're just going to look at, let's put another Trump in the office. If he does his job right. And as it was said in the election, many said, you know, he's got to lose this thing not to get in. It's got to be his loss. It is his to lose because it's a change election, right? You're coming off of 8 years of a presidency. You're coming off of this time where people are starting to grow weary of this particular administration, and it's time for a great change that happens. And this was the time for that. The only thing Trump could have done was lost it. The only thing Trump could do is truly lose it when it comes to the succession that could be there in his family. Because if he knocks it out of the park and shows that he's got the goods and then opens the door for his daughter to walk right on in, I mean, that could happen. That could happen. But what's interesting is the nepotism that takes place. And the question I'm asking is this different than favoritism? I mean, you know, nepotistically, generally, we're talking about relational connections. We're talking about those who actually have some degree of blood relation when it comes to getting their positions. But my question is it really any different? I think that we view nepotism differently than favoritism. Because, it was obviously a family member. But apparently, Ivanka said she was going to stay away from the White House, and now she's got an office there. So, obviously not staying away. Obviously, she is getting closer to the politics rather than further away. And some may view it as, well, this is sick and this is unjust, this is nepotism. But the other question is, how is this different than putting a friend in your position? Because that happens. Promise you, that's what a cabinet is, right? Unless you're Abraham Lincoln, who apparently said, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. Most people put their friends in those positions. They look at this as an opportunity to stack the deck in their favor. They don't hire strangers. Generally, yeah, it's not people who are completely out of the blue who just happen to apply and they have a couple of interviews and like, okay, well, you think you're going to fit. Let's bring you on in. I'll give you a try. It's not that at all. It's no. We've worked together before. We know each other. This guy's always been good to me. So how is nepotism any different? Except for the fact that it has some degree of blood relation, why is it different? And I guess, you know, you could say, well, if somebody's got the name, right, that perhaps could weigh more when it comes to a particular type of dynamic. Like, for instance, if, again, Trump proves to be a great president and she follows up on that with that Trump brand, then, yeah, nepotism helped her. More so than a Bannon, who doesn't have the Trump brand, but would have to say, I built the Trump presidency, therefore I should be president next. But when it boils right down to it, is nepotism and favoritism really any different? And is there ever a situation where favoritism does not play? I don't know. I want to believe that there's pure fairness and complete opportunity somewhere. I want to believe that. I want to believe everything is not about what you know, everything is not about who you know, but what you know. I want to believe that. But I don't think we see a lot of evidence of that. I think that generally speaking, there's a rung on the ladder that you begin to climb because you have those contacts, you've been able to make some, so you've been able to grow your network. And again, is that wrong, right? Or is there something about having the reward of a network that allows you to advance in ways that others without that network don't? I don't know. I know that Pope John Paul II said that the true tragedy of the poor is not their state of being poor, but it's the fact that they don't have a network that will help them climb out of that. I mean, my goodness, I know this, right? I know it intimately, having invested every dime, literally, that I had to my name, and then some, in a new company, and being broke, literally broke. If it wasn't for a network, I would have nothing. I have a network. Praise God, I've got a network, and I've got people who trust me and believe in me, and I've been around a market for a long, long time, and people know they can rely on me. They know that. They know I'm not going to do something stupid. But for those who don't have that, what do you do? So I guess if there's a question I'm asking and answering, it's is it bad first, and is there a lesson to be learned? Because Jesus says something very interesting in Scripture. He says, make friends with dishonest wealth. Remember, that passage is so bizarre. What's he mean by that? So essentially what he's saying is have a network, right? Have a network. Have a network of those who can help you. Joseph of Arimathea was a rich man, very much so, who procured the upper room for the final celebration of the Seder meal before the crucifixion. We assume that the Shroud of Turin was his tablecloth, because they weren't preparing for a burial and they needed burial garments. So they knew where they had a big tablecloth that they could go get and wrap Jesus up in. But it was because Joseph of Arimathea was a man of means, had a tomb. Poor people didn't have tombs. So it's interesting that Jesus even says, hey, you know, find a way to connect, right? Find those contacts. Find those who can help propel you. So I guess in the grand scheme of things, is the nepotism really wrong? Is the favoritism really wrong? Or are we actually instructed to have a network? That's all we have time for. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.